Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hello and welcome to Inside the Cylinder. This is episode 105, little all-star break episode, since we don't have a whole lot going on. I am Matt Way, one of your co-hosts, and as always, I'm joined by Inside the Cylinder legend, Detroit Bad Boys writer, David Fernandez. David, what's going on?
Not much. I like that intro, and I appreciate it. I feel like we should start to really amp each other up on some of these intros and see how grandiose we can make these things.
I like that. I like it.
Yeah, not much, man. You know, it's All-Star break time. I actually had to look at the calendar just to refresh my memory of when the Pistons were playing next. I think it's not until this upcoming Thursday, so we got a couple days off, so we figured it was a good time to sort of, I don't know, look back on the first half of the season, look a little bit towards the future as well, and just kind of go over some more general Pistons topics, not necessarily something that's, I guess, micro, you know, game-to-game type of stuff or player performances. So this is certainly going to be more of an episode that is covering, I guess, larger topics and should be a fun one, so I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. So our first topic is, David, give me two takeaways that you have from the Pistons' first half of the season.
Okay, I'm going to start. I'll give one first and I'll kick it to you because my first one's a little long-winded. So bear with me here, but it's all concrete because it is covering the same topic. So my first takeaway from the first half of the Pistons season, a 10-26 Pistons team, mind you, is that I, you know, when I was thinking about the first half, I think the main thing that I was trying to think of, like, what is it that I think about this Pistons team? Not necessarily like from a player perspective, but just in general, like from a directional standpoint. And I think one of the biggest things that is most important is who is the guy in charge. And I think Troy Weaver is the guy. I wrote that in all caps, two E's on my little doc here. So that is my first sort of thought when I think about the Pistons in general. I think they really did hit on their general manager. And I want to kind of break that down a little bit. So I initially questioned the Grant and Plumlee signing heavily. I question whether or not Grant could handle the responsibilities he signed up for. I think I was certainly not scarred, but concerned after watching him during the preseason. I heavily questioned the Luke Kennard trade. I was kind of a Kennard homer, I guess you can say. I was certainly on Team Kennard. And, you know, Detroit ended up winding up with Sadiq Bey. Kennard has been sort of in and out of the lineup with LA, and they just re-signed him. I questioned the Dennis Smith Jr. acquisition. I thought that Detroit may be able to net themselves a more useful player for Derrick Rose, but he's played about as well as I could possibly expect, seeing how it looked like he was about to be out of the league after his first couple games this year. And he's been really useful for this team, even though the Pistons haven't necessarily won a bunch of games with him on the roster. Did he hit on every single move? No, but that's not possible. So I don't need to go too much into, you know, maybe some of the misses and whatever it is that you might see as a negative or a Pistons fan might see as a negative from his acquisition so far. And we'll get into this a little later, so I don't want to handle or go too heavily onto the rookies. but it definitely looks like he hit on Sadiq Bey, Isaiah Stewart, and certainly Saben Lee down at 38. So that is my sort of general takeaway. It's like, okay, I am happy with the direction of this team, not only from, okay, we're bad, we're supposed to be bad, but just every single, not every single move, but most of the moves that I've seen Troy Weaver make so far this offseason and throughout the season, I've been really, really surprised with and really happy with. So I am excited about the Pistons' future.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I'm just going to go straight into my first takeaway because it's definitely related and I think it segues perfectly. So my first takeaway is that the Pistons are closer to being competitive than I ever expected them to be. Now, again, they've won 10 games. They're not good this year. We know that. But they have a bunch of, because of Troy Weaver's acquisitions, they got a bunch of just really good, hardworking, solid players. Guys that are going to be able to play very specific roles as the team gets better. You have your 3-and-D guy in Sadiq Bey. You have another guy in Jeremy Grant who can just wreak havoc defensively, who we know now can do a little more offensively. He can be, you know, the number two, number three scorer on a better team, something we maybe didn't think, especially like you said in the preseason. But I think certainly we have a good idea of right now. You know, you have a real feisty, quick point guard coming off the bench in Saben Lee. You have a really hardworking center in Isaiah Stewart, who's just going to do a lot of the dirty work. He's going to clean up on the boards. He's going to outwork opposing bigs, whether he starts, whether he comes off the bench. The thing that they need certainly is like a real number one dynamic scorer. If you get the number one pick this year, and you get Cade Cunningham, or, you know, if you say fall back a little bit and you get Jalen Green and he turns out to be a legit good number one, I think the Pistons are kind of into something at that point. And I think the rebuilding or what was the word Troy Weaver used today? Recharge.
Restoring.
Yes. Like that process, I think speeds up really quickly if you hit on a lead scorer this offseason.
Do you think that there's a world, let's say you do hit on that guy where the Pistons are finding themselves in a much more exciting race to the back end of the playoffs next year, not what we've seen from previous seasons where it was like a bowl of sadness trying to limp your way into the postseason? Do you think it could be that immediate, or I guess where do you sort of put that benchmark at where it's like, okay, like more than just competitive in losing games, but also, you know, actually, you know, starting to win some games?
Yeah, I definitely think, I mean, if they were in the West, I would say no, but you know, we've seen how bad the East is this year. If it's equally as bad next year, they could certainly make a good run for, you know, just even more than the 8 seed. You know, we're assuming a lot, of course, you know, that they do get Cade Cunningham or Jalen Green or a guy like that, and that they end up being really good as a rookie. You know, that it also assumes that Killian Hayes is going to certainly improve from what we saw in his 7 games early in the year. And that guys just make natural progressions and they develop. But if that happens, like I definitely do see, I could see them being like, you know, like one of these solid Pacers teams that we've seen for years that are just a really, you know, a really solid team that's definitely a playoff team. I think it is plausible at this point. It's certainly not likely, but there's a very clear path to it, I think.
I think the way that you said that was well put, because you mentioned that these guys are filling specific roles, right? They're going to know what they're supposed to do on the court and kind of where they stand, where they stand in the pecking order. And one thing that I think that, especially if Detroit is able to bump a guy up, right? You get one of these top picks and you're able to really rely on him. And then it sort of moves other guys down, but maybe to where they're naturally supposed to be. We had talked about in the last episode how it might be better for Josh Jackson to that he would be coming off the bench. That's going to be more of his natural role moving forward. And it makes me think about a thought that I've heard from, I think, Verno, Chris Vernon from the Ringer NBA show. I don't remember what team he was talking about. I think he was talking about the Clippers back before they had Kawhi and Paul George. And I think there's value to this. So they don't, even if, all right, obviously, best case scenario, we get a crazy difference maker. But there's certainly value into having a roster that's filled with guys that don't suck. Like, where you're not super thin in the on the bench and you're not super thin at certain positions in your starting lineup. And Detroit has kind of been able to not keep their head above water because they're drowning right now, but remain as competitive as possible under these circumstances because they've actually had a lot of solid performances coming off the bench. And then you're able to sort of maneuver guys around, especially if you do find that sort of alpha guy that is going to be able to carry this team, and you couple him with the Jeremy Grant, you couple him with the Killian Hayes, you're bringing Josh Jackson off the bench. Isaiah Stewart knows what he's doing. So I think it certainly does seem like everything is going in that right direction, because even right now, there aren't a ton of guys on that team that absolutely stink. It's more so that they just are missing out on some of the top end talent, and that could be hopefully quickly addressed in the first few picks of the NBA draft this upcoming offseason. So yeah, I think that's a well thought out take there, I guess you could say, Matt.
Yeah, I think there's something to it. You know, like you said, you know, say you move Jeremy Grant to the number two role. DeLon Wright is your number three role offensively. And then Isaiah Stewart's obviously like your five, and you have Sadiq Bey shooting threes as like the fourth option. Like there's something there offensively, certainly a whole lot better than what we've seen this year. And decent enough, I think, to compete in the bottom of the bottom half of the East playoffs. I'm interested to see what happens. It's going to be an interesting offseason, because if they hit, things get exciting a little quicker than I think anyone expected.
It's funny because you and I didn't tell each other what our takes were going to be for this particular topic. And this is truly fitting a puzzle piece right now, because my second thought is that even though this season has been fun so far, and I'm sure I'll be covering this team for the long haul, it hurts to think of this rebuilding or retooling or restoring or whatever it is that they want to call this as a long-term reality. And I know it's not fully in Detroit's control, but do I hope that they're able to land a top 3 to 5 pick in this year's draft. So we're talking about a competitive team here shortly, like you had just broken down. So I'm really just praying that the Pistons are more Grizzlies than they are the Kings or pre-Chris Paul Suns. You know, that is what I am really, really hoping for, because even though it has been fun, there's still just been, and I know, Matt, you and I have, there's times when we're recording this show where it's just not as exciting as other times when the losses are piling up and, you know, the highlight of the week is Saben Lee scoring like 20 or something like that. I am really, really hopeful that you're right, and that this is going to be something that starts to trend upwards even quicker than we all imagined, because it did seem like it was going to be a 3-4 year process when the slate was completely wiped clean. But I think there's a lot of room for optimism right now to where this could really be a 2-3 year process when we're talking about a fun, young, competitive Pistons team, like we've seen, as I said, with that Grizzlies teams when they hit with Ja Morant. And even looking back to like the most fun year with the Pistons back in the day when they had Tobias Harris and Marcus Morris and a young Andre Drummond and a young Reggie Jackson, like that was a lot more fun. Not hoping that it obviously repeats the years following in these upcoming years for Detroit and what those years following were for that team. But I really am hopeful, and I do see the light at the end of the tunnel which I couldn't have said following last year's season for sure.
No, absolutely. When you're writing and you're podcasting about this stuff, it can be tough sometimes. You got to dig pretty deep. So I totally get where you're coming from there. I'm a huge like basketball NBA nerd, so I love the team building aspect, but I get where you're coming from. So my second takeaway is, you know, it's kind of, I guess I can relate it to that a little bit. You know, sometimes it's tough to come up with interesting stuff to write about and talk about, but I'll tell you that despite the fact that they're losing, it hasn't really affected when I'm watching the games, how much fun I'm having, because they just work so hard. They put runs together in every single game. They never give up. And they just makes a bunch of really solid plays. You know, they have this stretch of just real kind of surprising competency, maybe, from what I expected. And maybe it's just my expectations for what the season was going to look like, but I've had way more fun watching this team in the first half of the season than I had watching the last three or four seasons, outside of Blake Griffin's, you know, all NBA season. But I really have, just from a sitting down and watching the games perspective, I really have enjoyed watching the team for the most part.
Yeah. And I think part of that is, this is a team where you start to see guys that remind you of just the heart and soul that was in some of our favorite Pistons teams of all time. You see that in Sabin Lee. You see that in Jeremy Grant. I see that in Josh Jackson. I see that in Isaiah Stewart. You know, there's so many guys, Sadiq Bey. There's so many guys on this roster where it just seems like they match the sort of soul of what is Detroit Pistons basketball. And I think that's worth something. It might sound sort of cheesy in that, yeah, I mean, yeah, if the Pistons were also like the 2016 Warriors, I wouldn't care. Oh, I mean, that team had its own sort of grit to it as well. But, you know, they don't have to be fully in the mold of teams that I remember from my childhood. But at the same time, it doesn't hurt. Like, it still is pretty awesome to see guys that are, you know, sort of rough and that, you know, fight for possessions and fight for loose balls and just kind of do the little things that might not show up on a box score, but at the same time, lead to a good culture building and also speak to the people of the city of Detroit and speak to like the brand of basketball that really resonates with the people here. So I think that's a really big part of why I have enjoyed this so much. It's not just that they're finding themselves in certain games where they shouldn't be or scrapping out wins against really good teams. It's kind of the way that they're doing it on the court. And that has been one of the most sort of biggest sighs of relief, I guess you can say, having watched this team, because that brand seems like it's been gone for a really, really long time. And, you know, it's starting to show itself here. And that's something that I think that the team and the city is eventually going to be really proud of. And I think that the fans will eventually start showing out to the arenas once they're reopened and they're able to sort of put that on display for everyone.
Yeah, I that's perfectly said. And it sparked an idea that we might have to do a pod where we just compare these guys to like former Pistons. And I'm going to tell you right now that just when you mentioned Sabin Lee kind of fitting that, you know, I'm going to just tell you right now that Sabin Lee is the 2020 version of Lindsey Hunter, I think.
That's a good one. That's exactly who I was thinking of. So, yeah, no, that would be a fun
exercise. Shout out Lindsey Hunter. Sure.
Yeah, I love Lindsey Hunter. That was one of the – this is kind of a little bit of a tangent. But he was – I don't know if people remember this, but a part of the Rasheed Wallace trade that got him to Detroit, he was let go. He was, like, cut from the Pistons. And it broke my heart because he was drafted by Detroit so, so long ago. I think he was the 10th overall pick. And then he wound his way back up on Detroit. Awesome on-ball defender. And then he was cut during just to make room for I don't necessarily know how how everything sort of worked from a dollar sign perspective, but it was like 10 days later and the Pistons re-signed him and he was able to be a part of that team in that championship run. So yes, shout out to Lindsey Hunter. But I remember thinking that when that all went down, it sort of broke my heart. So I was happy that he was able to get back with that team.
Yeah, they traded him. I think he went to Boston to make the salaries work. And I think that might have been one of the trades that sparked the rule about not being able to sign with the team that just traded you. you could do that a lot more back in 2004.
Well, good. That man's got a ring because of it, so he deserved it.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Absolutely. All right. So for our second topic, we are moving on. And this is, I guess you can say this is a philosophical concept here, Matt.
This is a great one.
Yeah. So this is an old, you know, I guess, debate about humanity in general. But this is nature versus nurture is what we're calling this one. And the nature in this case would be Troy Weaver. I'll break this down. And the nurture would be Dwayne Casey. So the question is, who do you credit most with the pleasant surprise that is the rookies? Sadiq, Saban, Isaiah, we talked about them, and the free agency / trade acquisitions. Grant, Jackson, Dennis Smith Jr. So clearly here we're saying that nature is Weaver because he brought these guys in to the team kind of based on who they are as players and how he sees them molding with the organization. The nurture part is Dwayne Casey because he is the guy that is literally nurturing these guys and coaching these guys and, you know, has something to do with their on-court performances for sure. So I'm going to kick that question to you, Matt. Nature or nurture for who do you credit with some of these pleasant surprises from this current Pistons group?
Yeah, so this is a tough one. You know, like nature versus nurture, I think the answer is a lot of both. You know, I don't want to upset any people who study this. I definitely don't know the real answer to this, the nature versus nurture question. But, you know, I'm going to lean towards Dwayne Casey getting slightly more credit. And I certainly give Troy Weaver a ton of credit just in finding these guys and finding guys. And he said it from the start, you know, they want to find good people, hardworking players, guys that reflect, you know, the winning nature of these teams that we were talking about, you know, the mold that all these great Detroit Pistons teams had. You know, you need guys like that to buy in, but I think it's harder to actually get them to buy in. Troy Weaver is going to be a much bigger part of whether this team and whether this franchise, you know, really competes and contends in the future. But just for this first half of the season, the job Dwayne Casey has done to get these guys playing so hard on such a bad team, on a 10-26 team, you know, that is not something that is easy to do. He's taken his lumps during his Detroit career, Dwayne Casey has. And, you know, I really think he's owed some apologies this year because I think he's just done a fantastic job. And so I give him slightly more credit for that great job that he's done for the first half of the year. What say you, David?
I am surprisingly going to So I'm going to break this down in two parts here. But so I'm going to go nurture, aka Dwayne Casey, for the rookies. I really think he has put them in the best position possible. He's been mostly consistent in their minutes, and I've seen way more out of Sadiq Bey, Stewart, and Lee than what they were billed for going into this season. Like, Bey was sort of really deemed as the catch and shoot 3-and-D guy, and we're seeing him do a lot more than that. I know you've written about this, Matt. You've written about this already. So, you know, we're seeing him get into the paint. We're seeing him post up. We're seeing him now start to even finish in transition a little bit more, and just do things where I had written something earlier. I wrote the Sadiq Bey season preview where I was talking about how I really want to see him add a little bit more to his game, or just utilize his strengths a little bit more. You know, I'm talking about like relocating from beyond the 3-point arc, not just being a catch and shoot guy, but also, you know, being able to sort of come to the ball, find the ball, just do little things that you see modern 3-point shooters do nowadays. And I think he's done a really good job of that. I guess moving on from Bay, you know, we're seeing what I want to call sort of like an unleashed Saben Lee and Isaiah Stewart. And I think that has a lot to do with Dwayne Casey sort of giving them that allowance. You know, Saben Lee is that point guard gets into the paint, sort of figures it out from there, sort of a freelance type of offense when you have him in there. But that's Casey saying, hey, I trust you enough to make the right basketball play, so I'm going to allow you to do that. Isaiah Stewart, I mean, this he might have just done whatever it was no matter what. He's just a sort of a beast out there. And but I think it does take, you know, just some, he has the right direction. We're not seeing him sort of truly just go out there and just run into a bunch of bodies. He gets himself in a little bit of foul trouble, yes, but I think that he is doing it with a purpose, and he's been making really solid plays all season long. And now you're starting to see him even shoot a little bit more, which I think is a part of his game and something that I think Casey is probably believes in from what he's seen out of practice. Now, the second part of this, and I really want to make this, you know, I really want to give Weaver his due on this. This is for Jeremy Grant. I'm going all Weaver on Jeremy Grant. That was his guy. It was essentially a question of Christian Wood or Jeremy Grant. And only the Pistons and Nuggets were the ones that were offering up Jeremy Grant $20 million a year. And Weaver knew Grant from his days in Oklahoma City. And he somehow knew that he was capable of producing to the level that we've seen him produce so far this year. So I do really want to give my nod of the cap to Weaver on that, because I really do think that he knew in his heart of hearts that Grant was going to be as good as we've seen him so far this year. So it's kind of, I guess I'm sort of skating a little bit here, but I think that that's the way that I see both of those types of those groups, I guess you can say.
Yeah, you're not skating at all, because you're absolutely right on Jeremy Grant. It's really impressive. You know, Josh Jackson, I think, he was more of a natural or obvious pick. Jeremy Grant was, you know, it says a lot about Troy Weaver's basketball eye and his ability to kind of think outside the box and to be able to project guys into different roles than what they were previously. And that's something that I think should really encourage Pistons fans moving forward. You know, the other guy that you mentioned, kind of when you asked the question, Dennis Smith Jr., I think is a real credit to me to Casey, because I continue to be amazed at the defensive effort that he puts forth now compared to what he has throughout his career. And that to me is just total buy-in to what the team is doing. I give Casey a lot of credit on that one.
Yeah, it's a trust where I think Dennis Smith Jr. did have that sort of sense, and we talked about this concept in previous episodes, that sort of basketball mortality. So Dennis Smith Jr. really did have to believe in Dwayne Casey to put him in the best position possible to continue his NBA career, and he's fully bought in. I think the basketball mortality part has something to do with that, but at the same time, when he was getting pulled and not playing, and he doesn't always finish games, but when he was getting pulled in like the fourth quarter, when he just wasn't looking too good in some of his early games in Detroit, I could see there being a level of doubt there where it's like, hey, this coach doesn't know how to use me. And all of a sudden you're on your third coach where you're thinking that. But at the same time, he certainly bought into what Dwayne Casey was selling. And I think that's why we've seen probably the best version of Dennis Smith Jr. so far throughout his career. Even in these, you know, few games that we've seen him so far in Detroit. So I would agree with that one too, Matt.
Yeah, I think we should give the Bad Boys documentary about 5% credit too, because everybody seems to have watched that in anticipation of going to the coming to the Pistons. So maybe there's something to that too.
Yeah, I was once on a flight, and I don't know about you, but sometimes, and this might be, you know, really revealing a little bit too about too much about myself. Every now and then I'm on a flight and I get weirdly like emotional, and I don't know if it's like this weird sort of like sense that, you know, fragility where it's like I'm not in control of my fate. I don't know what's going on in like the subconscious there, but I remember once I was on a flight and I was watching, they had like the 30 for 30s and they had the Detroit Bad Boys one, or I don't even know if that was a 30. It was something. I think it was like a Grantland production or something, but it wasn't necessarily a 30 for 30. Who cares? It doesn't matter. But my point being is that I was watching that and I got all up in my feelings. Like, I'm not talking, I'm crying on the plane, obviously, but I just remember really feeling something while watching that for like the fifth or sixth time on this plane. And yeah, I can see how it would do that to you, because it certainly has done it to me before.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty normal phenomenon on a plane, so you don't need to be ashamed there. And the Pistons just have that effect, I think, on us, you know, us Michigan natives. I'll tell you that when the Pistons won the title in 04, I was kind of in an isolated spot too. I was actually in Germany, like on this trip, with some kids from my high school and some adults. And so we actually like stayed up and watched, or not, you couldn't really watch back then. This was 04. But we tracked the box score, paid at the hostel to use the computer for like 3 hours and track the box score. And there were emotions that night for sure. And the next day it was, I think the Pistons do that to the best of us.
Definitely. For sure. Well, obviously you and I are here recording our 17th hour of this show, so I think that we're allowed to feel that way. All right, so our final topic, there's gonna be a little bit of a shorter episode, but that's fine. So Matt, I wanted to get, what is your bold second thought for the second half of this season?
So my first bold prediction, and it might even be a hot take at this point, because There's not a whole lot of reason to believe in it, but I think that you're going to see Sekou Doumbouya make some strides in the second half. I've noticed lately a bit of mechanically some changes in Sekou, especially in his like 3-point shooting. He can definitely be like he kind of throws the ball at the rim with his wrist. He kind of flicks it up in the air about 1,000 feet too high, which is just not ever going to be sustainable unless you're like Steph Curry, which Sekou is certainly not. He looks to have a solider, a more solid base, a smoother just motion with his upper body. And we saw in the last game some pretty creative finishing around the rim that we've seen a little more lately. It looks to me like he's really been working on some things in practice, and he is maybe starting to implement them in the games a little more. He's obviously going to get more time in the second half. He's going to get more repetitions to, you know, get this stuff to get to a higher level. And I've been pretty down on Sekou all year. He's been just outright bad, like, let's be honest. But I've seen a couple things that make me think that we're gonna see something a little different from Sekou in the second half. I don't think he's gonna be like a positive player or anything, but I think we're gonna start to see maybe a path to success for him.
So we're going to see some of those flashes that we saw in the preseason out of Sekou more consistently this year.
Yeah, and you know, we saw what it was only like a 4 or 5 game stretch in last year. When he got put in the starting lineup, he had a really good like 5-game stretch right off the bat. And I think it's going to be a little longer this second half of the year. I think you're going to see maybe a 10 to 12 game stretch where it starts to look like he's putting it together a little bit. You know, he's not going to sustain it. You know, he's just not at that level right now. But I just have this feeling that you're going to see a little more from Sekou in the second half.
Okay. I am here for that because I need it.
I think we all do.
Okay.
Most of the year I've been thinking, you know, he's 2 years away from being 2 years away. And if he doesn't have a stronger finish to the second half, it's going to look a little more grim, I think.
For sure. Yeah. I would agree with that. He's not going to be, I really don't think he's Henry Ellenson 2.0. Not that they're the same player at all, but we've seen things from Sekou Doumbouya throughout his career that give you that, you know, this isn't completely unbased. You know, this is something that is, you've seen it, you know, you talk about what you're seeing right now in the last game. We've talked about what we've seen in the preseason. We have talked about what we've seen in last season. So yeah, there's certainly reason to be optimistic just because it wouldn't be some just stone cold, like it just wouldn't be some first sighting that we've seen out of Sekou. This would be something that would remind us of some of the better times we've seen Sekou in a Pistons uniform. Sorry, what was that?
Oh, no, that's well said. I didn't have anything else. What's your first bold prediction?
Okay, I only have one bold prediction. Okay. So I think, and this is in the same vein as you, this is an optimistic episode, and I'm here for it. The people need it. I need it. My soul needs it. I need to recharge the batteries for this upcoming second half of the year. So I think we are going to get some games out of Killian Hayes this year that have the doubters in Pistons land take a collective sigh of relief. I don't think it's time to like burn all your receipts if you're some huge doubter, but I think that there is going to be, he's going to get back into the rotation here sometime in the nearish future. I don't know when that will be. And they had some quotes. Torrey Weaver had some quotes earlier today that had talked about that, that there's no definitive timetable, but they like where he's at. But I think that I'm really basing this off of, and we talked about this a little bit in the last episode, Matt, that Torrey Weaver has done a really good job from a talent and evaluation standpoint, specifically in this last year's draft. Killian Hayes was the number 7 overall pick in that draft. That was a Torrey Weaver selection for a reason. And he was so bad for the most part in his first 7 games of the year. So for that reason, yes, the bar might be a little bit low, but I still think that there's a reason Torrey Weaver selected him that high. There's a reason he took him over Tyrese Halliburton. There's a reason why the Pistons put him out there in the lion's den and had him be the starting point guard entering this year. And I do think that we're going to see maybe just a more Killian Hayes with a clearer mind, a Killian Hayes with hopefully some sort of newfound belief in himself. I know he's been working on his shot quite a bit. And I really do think that we're going to get a couple games this year where it's like, okay, this is what I'm talking about. This is what we're going to build off of next season. And hopefully come next year, we're going to start seeing a lot of those games in bunches. And I mean, that might just be some blind faith, but I think that if anyone deserves any type of blind faith right now, it's going to be Troy Weaver and his ability to scout in draft selection. So that is what I'm going with for my bold prediction for the second half of the season.
I like it. And I'm with you. I almost said the same thing. So we kind of have a mind melt going tonight. But I agree. So I hold on to those receipts, Les. I think you're going to be proven right soon.
Yeah, for sure. He needs it more than I do. So definitely hold on to those. Or maybe you can get a Shamik on and print it out and eat it in 5 years.
That's not happening on this this pod. But
oh, no, we're not doing that. I'm not digesting paper for Twitter. I'm not doing much for Twitter. All right, you got another one, Matt?
I got one more. So
all right,
my second bold prediction, and I don't know how bold this really is, but I think there's going to come a point in this year where the Pistons fan base is just going to completely melt down and get super nervous because the team is going to win too much.
Whoa.
I don't think at the end of the year, I don't think it's going to be that bad. I could see them, you know, falling into the 4 or 5 slot. But I think these young guys, you know, who play really hard, at some point they're all going to just kind of click at the same time. Like we've seen a couple of them do it. But you know, often we see, you know, Jeremy has a big game or Sadiq has a big game. Isaiah Stewart plays great and kind of keeps them in games. Like there's going to be a stretch at some point where I think they're going to all kind of put it together for, you know, a week or two. They're going to win games and people are going to start to get super nervous. And, you know, especially on Twitter, what the reaction is going to be. It's going to be a complete meltdown. And I'm here to tell you to just be patient because all these young guys playing heavier minutes in a longer season than they're used to, you know, things are going to go bad eventually. And we've talked about the talent gap, obviously. Like that's going to take over, you know, over a longer stretch of games. But I do think that they're going to make people nervous at some point, especially with a much easier schedule in the second half of the year.
That's true. They have had a really difficult schedule so far in the first half. And I think when they do get Killian Hayes back into the lineup, whenever that is, I don't see it happening anytime in like the next week and a half or anything crazy like that, obviously. But that's going to take its own sort of period of adjustment. And that in itself might produce some L's, which is fine. It's not a season where you're looking to stack up a bunch of those or to stack up a bunch of wins. And you said, you know, in the 4 or 5, you mean like the bottom 4 or 5 of the standings,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. No, they're not going to be threats for the playoffs. I do not mean that.
That's pretty optimistic of you. That might be the most optimistic thing we've heard because going into this stretch, it has been not great. So the Pistons have lost a whole bunch of games. So if they're able to do that, I think they've built themselves a comfortable enough cushion to where I'm personally not going to freak out. And I wouldn't mind seeing a couple more wins just from a viewer standpoint. But at the same time, I hope you're right because I don't think it's going to jeopardize their ability to get one of these top guys truly at the end of the day. And I think they'll still wind up at the bottom of, you know, the standings or near the bottom, not below Minnesota or anything like that. But yeah, Matt, I really don't got anything else. I think this was really a very positive episode and I really like that.
Yeah, this was a fun one. It's nice to be optimistic from time to time, even if you are a Detroit sports fan.
Is it because we haven't watched any games in like a week and then all of a sudden we're just talking ourselves into the future of this team? Maybe after a real sobering slate of Pistons basketball coming up, we'll hopefully not have a downtrodden tone by any means, but it might bring us back a little bit more to reality. But no, I think that we've all that you've made a lot of really good points so far in this episode, and I think that there is reason to be optimistic. This isn't just us gassing each other up right now. I really do think that there is just so many small little avenues of bright spots that we've seen throughout the year. So be happy, be positive, Pistons fan. Things are going to get better sooner than later.
Yeah, and we saw maybe one of the brightest spots of the season, in my opinion, was the second to last game where they beat the Raptors by 25 or whatever it was. And that was without, you know, the Raptors were without some guys, but they still had Kyle Lowry in there and Norman Powell. you know, but the Pistons were without Jeremy Grant and Josh Jackson, and they just looked awesome. Like they just find ways. And, you know, when they put it together like that, it's just a ton of fun to watch for me.
I think they scored more points in the first quarter in that game than was scored by either team in the first quarter of the All-Star game, which was kind of something that was blew my mind as I was watching the All-Star game. But Matt, no, well said. And that'll do it for this episode. So as Matt kicked it off in the intro, I'm David Fernandez, joined by my co-host Matt Way here. And all of our writings can be found on articles can be found on DetroitBadBoys.com, as well as every new episode of this podcast. And all episodes are on the Detroit Bad Boys stream. I'm sure you know that by now. But we will catch y'all next week and have some games to talk about. So, peace.